You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. I'm talking with actress, producer, and teacher Dylan Christina Moore today. Dylan is a classmate of mine from Juilliard. She's a wonderful actress and an inspired producer. She is an innovator, and I'm learning so much from her path. I hope you enjoy the 10th episode of The Compass. So what does the dark side look like for you? What does that mean to you?
You know, so I was thinking a lot about this question because I know that's how you start each episode. And so on my way over here, I did this. I was listening through each one going, okay, what is everybody like, you know, just taking the survey.
Like, I feel like everyone knows the general sense of what I mean, but it's different, you know.
Yeah.
It's personal to everybody.
And, you know, and I really was happy to take some time. The best place to think in the world, the New York City subway transit system, and think about what that meant to me. And one of the things, the first thing that came to mind when I was thinking about the dark side is that often you ask as an artist, and I think one of the biggest lessons for me over the past 10 years has been knowing that for me, the dark side as an artist is the same thing as dark side as just a human being, you know? And one of the great things that I don't know if it's ever helped make my acting career, but is that my manager, who's an amazing guy, David Guss, he would always say to me, you know, be where makes you happy. Because I'd be like, should I be in LA? Should I be in New York? What should I do? Mm-hmm. He's like, go be happy. You are the best when you are happy. Find that for yourself and everything else will fall into place. And I just have been so appreciative of that advice because I think that's how we survive the darkness, you know, and the darkness comes in so many different ways. And for me, it's, you know, as I have in my life battled depression and anxiety, that I found this is okay. So this is one of the things I found. Somebody put this on Facebook the other day, somebody from school. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's called Everything is Awful and I'm Not Okay, Questions to Ask Before Giving Up. And like the questions are like, are you hydrated? Have you eaten in the past 3 hours? Have you showered in the past day? Have you stretched your legs? You know, and it goes through all of these just basic questions of like, where are you in the world? How are you? What have you done today? And it's such a great list for me because I'm like, so often I find myself go, yeah, I've just had like 4 cups of coffee today. Like, of course I feel crazy.
I haven't eaten and it makes everything worse.
Yeah. I'm still in my pajamas on my couch, on my computer, and it's 1. That's crazy. And while in my head I'm like, well, I've been working for the past 3 hours or whatever it may be, I'm still in my PJs on my couch. And, you know, that's not conducive to mental health.
Right.
You know, and then the other thing I was thinking is like, the other thing I was thinking about, I was just having this conversation with Alejandro, who is on episode 1. And we were in South Africa teaching with A-Step this summer. And I'm so moved when I'm in a place that makes me feel small, you know, and I think, you know, he was asking me about that. And I think that there's something like this deep solace that I find when, you know, I'm on a safari in South Africa looking at a rhino going, damn, this rhino has been around for, like, who am I to worry about, you know, the little things when I can look up at a mountain and say that's the good stuff. That's the, you know, the spiritual for me is, you know, as Carl Sagan called it, like the pale blue dot, you mm-hmm. know, when you look something that far away, you go, you know, the world is really, really big. And let's just find today.
Right.
You know?
And that the things that are stressing you out are really small compared to everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, ambition and ego are amazing drivers in lives, especially for artists. They're the most ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I find that placing perspective on that ambition and finding a balance of ego that's useful and ego that's destructive mm-hmm. is so important. And looking at the little things are as often the way I can find the way to take the next step, the next moment.
Right.
You know, that moment-to-moment work at school really applies to life, too.
Taking that advice from your manager of just finding a way to be happy besides the career stuff, was that something that, I mean, that's wonderful, wonderful advice, and I think it's also hard to do, to not obsess over mm-hmm. the career stuff when it maybe isn't going the way you thought it would or the way that mm-hmm. you wish it would. But I love it. It's amazing advice. Was it a long journey to kind of be able to take that?
Yeah, you know, I think it was something that even back in school, as I've struggled with the darkness for most of my life, that finding at school that there was a moment when I realized that happiness was going to be more important to me than a super successful career as an actress. And that's a painful kind of realization, which is funny to say, but
right, because you're like, happiness, of course that should be more important, but
yeah,
it is hard to sacrifice something else for it, or to not sacrifice happiness in pursuit of the other thing.
Yeah And I think I remember at school being, you know, there was being such a struggle of getting into these characters that were so dark and just losing myself inside of them and losing relationships, and because of that, not being a good friend, definitely not always being a good daughter because of that, and sister, and, you know, thinking, I mean, I love the work, but, you know, who's going to take care of me when I'm old? My brother, you know, definitely, you know,
yeah.
Not, you know, it's not going to be Arlie from Getting Out who's going to mm-hmm. be taking care of me, you know, so I think it's been a very long journey, but I think I'm finally okay with making happiness the priority, I think.
Mm-hmm. what is your family, how do they digest you as an artist and you pursuing this as a career?
You know, I think, you know, I'm from LA, and so mm-hmm. and I worked as a kid as an actor for a little bit, and I think that experience was strange for my family. There's no artists in my family, and so
was that something that you brought up as a kid, or it was just accidental? Or?
Well, I was in a summer musical theater thing, and you know, the director was a manager, and then she got me an agent, you know, and then, you know, you start working a little bit, and I had to make the decision at one point, like, am I going to drop out of school and continue doing this stuff? And, you know, I had just gotten into a new school, and I had to miss all of October for my first semester in sixth grade, and because I was filming a terrible movie. And when I realized, do I want to graduate? Do I want to go to prom? Do I want to, like, you know, that those were the priorities. And I think my parents were like, whew, you know, oh, thank you, God. You know,
I understand this.
Yeah, totally. So they were so happy about that. And I think in high school, as I started thinking maybe more seriously, like, do I, you know, what do I do? And what my dad said, you know, okay, if you really want to be an actress, you got to apply for the best. And so he was like, I looked it up online. Juilliard is the best one, and you should apply to that. And I was like, okay, I have no idea what Juilliard is. and I think when I got in, that was like the first step of like reassurance from my parents that, right. You know, it's, there was like a, it became much probably easier for them to support me, but right. They've always been supportive. I mean, they've always been
right, but there was a structure there that they could understand.
Yeah, to
help
yeah.
You get started.
Yeah, and you know, it's such an ephemeral thing that we do that to have the stamp of approval from an institution is, mm-hmm. You know, is something that even, you know, even now when I'm not working, I'm look back and I go, well, at least I went to Juilliard. I can always say that. That's nice, you know. And but I think that it's been since graduating, it's been really, really hard for them. Yeah. Really, really, really hard. And I am sorry to, you know, put them through what I've had to put them through, you know, because they so desperately love and want me to succeed. And I think for them to see, you know, the pain of not working is
yeah.
just, you know, it's really hard for them. It's
yeah,
really
I know
hard.
My parents feel that way too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. It's hard to say, what do you say, you know, what do you say yeah. to them?
Because it does, it's an odd system, and it doesn't always make sense when they ask, you know, well, how about this? Or why don't you get a different agent? Or why don't you do, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's there's no rhyme or reason to this stuff.
And your brother's younger, so for him, has it always been like, oh, well, that's what she's always done?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's been, you know, I'm just his sister. It's not, there's no, it's, the rest of the stuff is fine, but he's just like, so are you going to come hang out and watch a movie with me? you know, and he's the most adamant. I had to change my name when I graduated, and mm-hmm. he's the one that just fights it so hard. He hates the name change. But you know, he's it's great because he kind of doesn't have as much, you know, he doesn't have a stake in it in the same way, of course, a parent does yeah. or a partner does. But he's just like, I'm gonna love you no matter what, you know, which is really yeah, nice.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So I know you haven't been focusing as much on acting lately, and you've been putting your energies kind of more towards the producing side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit of how you started to get involved with that?
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, I used to live in this 5-bedroom house in the Upper mm-hmm. West Side with this backyard, and it was, you know, I lived in like kind of a commune situation for many years at school, and I don't know, I found some very, I don't know why that brought me so much joy and pain.
Well, it was a very specific chapter.
It was fabulous. We had a lot of fun, and so, you know, I lived with Creed Garnick and Charlie Barnett and Samira Wiley and Marla Phelan, and we had so much fun. But we moved into this place that was so fabulous. It was such a cool place, you know, and I just looked around and I'm like, man, I just love the way this place looks. Like, there should be like, you know, somebody should sing on a ukulele in front of that wooden fence in my backyard. That looks so, that would look awesome. And, you know, I think a big part of that was inspired by that impulse of putting art in places that aren't theaters is so derivative of our experience with Brian Murdy's mm-hmm. and the Lake Lucille experience. And I just found that so soul-shaking that I really wanted to see what that meant for me. And I think it was some measure of control. You know, I have zero control in our industry. And so, you know, I said, oh, I have time. I have a cool place. I have a lot of incredibly talented friends. And I think, you know, I have a little bit of an administrative brain, you know, I can do that stuff. And so, you know, I sat down and I wrote the first email, mm-hmm. you know, and, And that first email turned into that first year, which was like 3 years ago, 3 months of three salons. I called them Le Salon, and invited, you know, all types of different people over and co-hosted with a different person each time. And the idea for me was to just feel out what it is, what I'm interested in, why I'm doing this. Are people interested in this? And I really enjoyed it. And it took me, you know, the next year I did two more, and then this year I've done one with another one coming up. And I think that the pull for me into producing has been a great reaction to the acting industry, because it allows me to be creative, to use my brain, both sides of my brain, and it allows me to not have to be in front of the camera, so to speak, which, you know, I really like, actually. It's really great to not have to be on stage sometimes, mm-hmm. you know,
and to still be creative.
And to still be creative and to still have something on the line. But yeah. It's not about whether I looked a certain way or said the line right or, you know, whatever. And that kind of has snowballed into like a bunch of other different producing projects, which, you know, it's taken me several years to kind of get fully comfortable with the idea that I can call myself a producer and not lose being an actress at the same time, holding those two things in my hand at once.
Yeah.
And it's been fun, and it's really nice when, as much as I love my own projects, it's really nice to like get to work with people who ask me to do something, which is just a thrilling feeling. It's just like getting an acting job. You're like, yay.
Yeah, yes, I want to be involved.
Yes.
I'm so glad you thought of me.
Mm-hmm.
And make something happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you did one at, you did a show at Ars Nova this summer, right?
Yeah. I did actually at a salon at an awesome performance space called Cloud City. In Brooklyn.
Oh, that's right. I missed that one, so I didn't see that information.
Yeah. It was so, you know, it's so serendipitous and amazing the way a lot of these things work. But they, my co-host and one of my best friends, Emma Galvin, she lives with a girl named Kate Hopkins. Kate is directing and working with this band called The Scouts, led mm-hmm. by Gina Phillips. And they, I kind of sight unseen was like, well, I know a couple of the people in this group from many different walks of life. And so I'm like, yeah, why don't you guys perform? This is going to be great. And they came in, they were so open, and they just blew everyone away. And I was so thrilled because they came up to me the next day and said, will you produce our show? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, it was kind of a scary yes, because I'd never thought I would produce like proper theater, you know, and what's great about it is it's not totally proper theater. It's like a band putting on a play, which can exist in a lot of different forms and a lot of different places, which mm-hmm. I think is like essential to the work I'm interested in. But it was really exciting. We did a sold out, way oversold show at Dixon Place, and then got to be a part of Ant Fest at Ars Nova this summer, which was just, for me, a dream come true.
Now, besides like all of the organizational side of it, so have you started having to get involved with like the fundraising part of producing, which I know is always kind of a daunting thought to me when I think of producing something myself?
Yeah, I think, you know, the question is always, well, what is producing?
Yeah.
And so it's a really good question. What the hell is it? I don't know. I mean, so far it seems to me there's three major components of it. The first is, administrative. You're writing the emails, making the connections, making sure there's a car to pick somebody up, a rental happening, or whatever it may be. The second part of it is financial, which is always the strangest part for me. I don't I haven't totally figured that out. I mean, when I've, everything I've done so far has been financed, I call it like live crowdsourcing, where I haven't used Kickstarter and those things really, but I like parties, I like beers, I like live music, and so we'll put together a party.
And people love giving money towards those things. And I'm
like, $10 for beers and music, it's so worth it. And it is, because the city is so expensive. And so, you know, and putting your money towards something like that, I think is always worth it and makes everybody feel like, you know, everybody got something out of it. So, so far, that's generally how I fundraise, is via party, and and then I think that, you know, but as I continue going down, I'm working on a new piece, and I think I'm gonna start exploring more grant writing and that avenue. But you know, I look forward. I also talk to people who are producers who have the big money guys, you know, who really,
right, I guess that's the mysterious part, is like, yeah, people have their name on things as producer who just gave money.
Yeah.
And then there's people like you who are like on the ground making it happen, that kind of producer.
Yeah.
So I was just curious.
Yeah. That. Well, if anyone's listening who has lots of money, I'll put it to good use.
She's got some great projects coming up.
But yeah, and then I think, and then the third part, which is really the part that I love the most, is the creative producing part. You know, yeah, there are different types of producers, and I try to always, I think of myself as a creative producer. As a curator, as a guider. And so I think in that capacity, it's the most fun, because it's where you get to dream. And as an outside eye, as an artist myself, I can say, you know, I think that this show, what if we tried something really different with it? What if we put it in a different, weird place? What if it, you know, I get to start thinking about, okay, the long term, or the framing of something, and that is always really exciting. I got to be the associate producer at Lake Lucille last summer, and it was really thrilling.
Do you want to just say a quick little blurb about what that is for people who don't know?
Yes, yeah, totally. Brian Mertes, who's a director, who is the head of the directing department at Brown Trinity Rep. He and his wife, Melissa Keevman, who's also a director, have a house upstate in a place called New City in Rockland County, and it's a lake house. And they, since 2001, started gathering, said, yeah, let's just invite a bunch of friends up to the house for a week. We'll look at a Chekhov play and put it on for a day and just have fun and eat well and drink and talk about Chekhov. And I mean, if this sounds familiar, this is now a model that many many places use. But they over the years, they did every one of Chekhov's plays, many of his short plays, really explored what Chekhov is and how to do Chekhov in a very, I mean, site specific is such a buzzword now, but
yeah.
And immersive and all those those things, but that truly is what it is. You know, they would invite on a Saturday 400 people up to this lake house, and they would take the first act on the front lawn, just like Chekhov says it's supposed to be, and then the second act would be right by the lake, and then you see, you know, Gail Rankin swimming across the lake, and Gabe Ebert and pushing the piano into the lake just like they're supposed to, and cutting down the cherry tree just like they're supposed to. And it takes 7 hours, and it's so, you know.
It really is some of the most magical theater I've ever seen.
And, you know, a huge part of it, to me, why it's so magical is that it's, and I think why I like producing maybe too, is that it's not just about the actors, because when you're an actor, it's very. But the designers are such a huge part of it, and they create this world for these actors to live in that's so extraordinary. And, you know, people like Debo are just total magicians. I mean, total fine arts magicians,
right,
who do things that are just just insane. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I went to this. Is that good, you think?
So you said that this year, what was your position you got to do?
This last year I was the associate producer, mm-hmm. Basically Melissa Keevman's brain and heart when her heart and brain are just so big. I would be like the spillover space. And I was so grateful that they asked me to come and work with them. But a big part of the conversation that Melissa and I were having when she was like, I know I want you here. I don't know what you're supposed to be doing yet. You're gonna be a lot of help. What is it? What are you doing? What are we doing? And, you know, eventually one of the things that we came to it was that I, you know, a big part of what I love people and mm-hmm. I love making people happy, and we kind of found that one of the words we used was like the retreat director, right? So like all these actors and design, 100 people are living there for a long time, and the work needs to have cushion to it, mm-hmm. So that you can land gently after, the gun has been pulled on stage and so what I loved about it and what was very creative for me was how to make the experience of it, the time outside of the work, feel comforting and safe and creative and dangerous and exciting and all of those things. Hopefully like any good producer, make it feel seamless and it was easy to do.
Right.
Behind the curtain and that feels very creative to me. Yeah. You know?
I know that you and Alejandro have done so much work with A-Step since graduating from school. I mean, you and I did a lot of outreach stuff when we were there together, and you've really carried it on. What part of your life is that? Tell me a little bit about what part of your heart that fills and how you're able to build that kind of work into your life. And I apologize for whatever construction sounds are coming in through the window.
Oh, stop it, construction.
I don't know what they're soldering.
Things happening. I think that, where to begin? I just wrote an article that hopefully is going to be in the Juilliard Journal in a couple months here. And I think one of the things that I was talking about this outreach work and this culture of outreach that was so prevalent while we were at school. And, you know, I think I've been thinking a lot about it, and there is, you know, a lot people call millennials our generation, these selfish people. But I think that it's not about the culture of outreach that I've seen in our generation has just been extraordinary to me. The amount of generosity, of spirit and time, in helping those in need and helping each other and forming community, especially in a world as globalized as ours, is just mm-hmm. extraordinary. And I think, you know, the 10 years that I was a teenager in early adulthood, you know, when I was in ninth grade, 9/11 happened, and my first year at Juilliard, Hurricane Katrina came, and by the time we graduated, the financial collapse had happened. I mean, what a framing for my youth, our youth. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, I think about that a lot, too, that after 9/11, like, we've basically grown up with a constant war.
Yeah.
Going on.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not even a little bit. It's just, that's 100% true. And I was thinking about that kind of framing and how so much of the work I've done, which with A-Step and otherwise has been a product of that, you know, and I think when I was at school, ArtReach, the student group that met every month to figure out, how do we help the world? What do we do? We need to do something. Mm-hmm. Between ArtReach and going to different places with A-Step and teaching, you know, I think I found through that work my artistry. I think that work made me keep coming back, because in asking young people to identify their story, their personal narrative, and take pride in that, I realized when I'm looking at them, that I haven't necessarily done the same. And you know, there's this trilogy that so a lot of time that, you know, in our New Orleans trips we talked about a lot, which was teaching, building with our hands, rebuilding, and performing. And that trilogy to me is the place kind of where I found myself transcend the title of actress and, you know, find myself as an artist instead. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who grew up in LA, that was the most empowering thing I think that's happened to me in the last 10 years is, I remember our first year at Juilliard, Richard Feldman saying, you know, talking about us as artists. And I told him afterwards, I think you guys made a mistake letting me in. I'm not an artist. I don't know what that means. And I grew up watching actresses in LA. I had a very different concept of what that was, what I was going after. And through ArtReach, I've been able to like change that title for myself and find my own personal narrative as an artist and as a woman, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that's kept me going back to it. And, you know, as we get older, it's so hard to, it's harder to do ArtReach because time is precious and got to pay the bills. And, you know, it's that, unfortunately, money is just the reality of our world. And it can be tough to find time, you know? And so there are little things that we can do, but the big thing that it's been nice to find this glorious project that Alejandro came up with of the Artist to Citizen Conference.
Yes, I was about to bring that up.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. It's so funny because, you know, Alejandro and I came up with I came up with my company, Our Exquisite Corpse, and then the salon is one of the projects of that. But we kind of came up with these ideas in the same year of like, okay, you know, how do we need to work. We need to work, you know? And I think this conference that is called Artist to Citizen, and it's based off President Polisi's book. President Polisi is the president of Juilliard, and mm-hmm. he wrote put together this fabulous book of essays and speeches he's written and given. And they're about why our artistry is just totally connected to the world outside. And when we forget that we're citizens of the world, that our community extends beyond the first row, you know, and that the art is deepened and is more impactful. And I just, it's so exciting to get to have, you know, this group of young people come in. And
yeah, you brought in teenagers, what, 30 or 40?
18 to like 25-year-olds, so college mm-hmm. age, and about 65 of them.
Yeah.
And Juilliard hosts us, and so they stay at the dorms, which is so crazy. they stay at the dorms, and we put together a five-day conference that's really pretty hardcore, but they are, you know, in activities from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night, and getting a dance class in the morning from Jesse Perez, and then having Kurt Toflin come in the afternoon, and then going to see a play at night, or, you know, the way we've I mean, every year it changes the theme and the structure of the conference, but it's been really exciting to see for Alex and I to be like, okay, how do we hit all of these things? How do we hit artistry? How do we hit citizenship? How do we hit what these two things are together? And how, right. most importantly, I mean, the big point of the whole conference is to give real tools, tangible steps to say, you want to change the world. You want to be an artist that impacts your community. Here are some real things that you can do. Here's how we begin. Which is not an easy, you know, beginning is the hardest part. It's, you know, it's like that first email I sent for the first salon was like the most difficult thing ever. Yeah. And I was like writing an email to Alejandro to like speak upon, like, and that, you know, that first step is so difficult. But those first steps are the foundation of everything that's to come. And if you have those aspirations, you know, I find it so important, and I see it just, it hurts my heart, and it hurts me when I look around at artists who don't know what's happening in Syria, mm-hmm. and who don't vote in elections, and who, you know, aren't responding to the world around them. And we all have such, you know, rich inner lives too, that the world is reflected in all kinds of ways that aren't necessarily, you know, by reading a newspaper. But I find the world outside of art to be so important to art itself. Other, you know, how can we ask the world to finance our plays? How can we ask people to buy our art, to invest in our dance companies, if we don't have an understanding of the people who are giving us that money, mm-hmm. and the world that they're living in, which contains politics and economics, mm-hmm. and international, you know, policy. And those things are so essential, I think, in the future, yeah. and sustainability of artists and art.
You know? Frankie and I came to the final evening of the conference this summer, and we just observed and we watched the young leaders were like performing different pieces that they'd put together throughout the week and talking about their experience. And I felt so honored to be in the room and to see the energy that you all had created was just beautiful. And the excitement that they all had to feel empowered and to take it back to their communities after this week was just absolutely amazing. And also to have found a community, some of these kids who maybe don't fit in wherever they're from and are definitely the odd man out, who to have these interests, like to have come here and found all these other people like them and feel empowered. It was just incredible. And also, I was just so proud of you and Alejandro and everybody who was working to see them. Like, you were the role models. And to have, you know, we met 10 years ago when we were in school, and to have watched you guys put together all of your life experience and to be giving it to other people and to be looked up to like that, it was just really beautiful for me to watch.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's, I thank you, and I'm really glad you guys were able to be there. It means a lot. And
I was definitely crying at different points.
I was crying from exhaustion.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
But the, you know, yeah, it's so, to get to, you know, look around and see what our friends are doing is such an amazing thing. And in our communities that, I mean, we come from an incredible community. New York is a crazy city. And when you can find your group of people that inspires you, things like this conference come about. And I mean, you know, if you're Alejandro, you work harder than like five people put together, mm-hmm. but like this, it's so thrilling to do that kind of work. And I'm so glad you were able to come. And so I hope we get to do it for many years to come.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Can I ask, are there certain things that you, certain like really tangible things that you turn to and you feel yourself going to the dark side, like in a day-to-day way, music or a book or a place, something like that?
Yes, I do. I think so. There's several things. I think that, I mean, first, that list I was mentioning earlier is a huge thing, because if, you know, you start going, you're on the subway and you start having those feelings, I think a big thing is like, okay, I need a sip of water. I need to like stand up. and be like, this is my body. I am a person in the world today, and all I need to do
get outside of your brain
is keep moving. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, I think what my big lesson that I've learned over the last couple years is communication. And I was so bad at that, and I'm still not the best at, you know, if I'm feeling down, calling somebody and talking about it. It's so hard. We've talked about that.
Yeah. It's hard, but it does help.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so for me, I think I've learned to call Jeff, my boyfriend, and he's been an amazing partner for me for the last 5 years, and I think that he gives me a sense of stability that's super helpful, and an understanding that, you know, he's a teacher, and so he has his thing that he does every day, and he gets to go inspire kids too, but, you know, it's so structured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I call him and I go, well, you know, I don't understand what's happening. There's things that, you know, everything's falling apart, and what's my career, and who am I, and how am I going to make money, and, you know, all of those questions that come up. And he goes, look at your last year. You went to South Africa with A-Step. You put on a salon. You produced a show at Ars Nova. You know, you start, and then it's that reflection that you need that's so helpful that mm-hmm. you go, oh, okay. Okay, but today was really bad. And he goes, yeah, today was bad. That's okay. Tomorrow will be better. Just wait. And that is so helpful. And I think the other things that for me are huge is I read a ton. Mm-hmm. And I love reading, and that's essential. And the other thing is travel. I'm a huge traveler, and I, you know, and at times I think it's probably hurt my acting career, but it's essential. It's me. I wouldn't be me if I didn't do it. And I am, you know, I was talking to Alejandro a little bit about this the other day about how hard he works and how I can't work at the same pitch that he does. You know, mm-hmm. I need days to just hang out, and I probably, you know, maybe 2/3 of the year work really hard, you know, really, really hard. And then 1/3 of the year, I have days where I'm like, my brain is, I have no creativity left, and I need to refuel. And the way mm-hmm. I refuel is sleep and travel and reading. And, you know, those are, and getting beers with friends. And those things are so essential to keeping a balance and keeping out of the darkness. But I think like the pale blue dot, travel has been for me a way to understand that, you know, sure, it would be great to be a famous, successful actress or producer or whatever, but that's not really what life is about. And we're like the 1% of the world less that is able, that has the privilege of even trying to be an artist, of even having the time to write an article, to do a podcast, to go on an audition. Right. And to count our blessings that way is not easy at all. But like they say for an AA, you know, one day at a time, one breath at a time, moment to moment, and we'll make it through. But it's hard. Life is hard, Leah.
It's so hard.
It's so hard.
It's so hard. Do you have any recommendations of shows you've seen lately, or friends shows, or things you're excited to see?
Yeah, I just saw Company XIV's newest show, Cinderella. I love Company XIV so much.
I
want
to see it. Colin mentioned that too.
It's glorious. I have so much fun going to their shows, and I just, Baroque burlesque, how much better does it get than that? I'm really excited to see Here at Playwrights.
Yes, I want to see that too.
Yeah, Cameron Scoggins is in that, and I've been hearing about, it sounds like quite the project. Hmm. I have a, you know, wife, all of our, the things we're excited about are things our friends are in. But Marla Phelan is in the new Fiddler on the Roof,
yes,
which I'm so excited about.
I love that she's in all the promos dancing.
Yeah.
I love it. Frankie and I always catch her.
Yeah, totally, totally. She just looks like she would totally be out in Russia just doing her thing. She's
that'll be exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's so much in this city always, and it's always tough to get to see everything, but I'm excited to go back to Juilliard and see some of Jesse Perez is directing a play there. Mm-hmm. And I love being able to go see his work. And there's so much. And, you know, the other, I have to plug it. I just saw the world premiere at National Sawdust of Julian Crouch's piece, puppetry piece. Julian Crouch is a designer and director, Tony nominated for Hedwig, and he works with musician Saskia Lane on this incredible, just darkly whimsical, the death and life of a puppet. This piece called Bird Heart that I just think is extraordinary, and it's the kind of thing that you only need 20 minutes, you know, to make great art. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have a 90-minute show.
No. Right.
Art is a very flexible thing, and it's great to see.
Is that running for a little bit, or was it just one night event?
Yeah, it was just a couple nights at this new space in Williamsburg, but you will definitely be seeing it again.
Okay.
I follow me around and I will tell you.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for talking with me. You're such an inspiration to me.
Leah, I adore you, and thank you for doing this podcast. I keep hearing so many people talk about it, and the warm cup of tea, chicken noodle soup for the soul that it is. It's so beautiful, and I love what it's doing for you too.
Thank you. Yeah, it feels good to have this conversation. So
love you, Leah.
Love you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Suffs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.